Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this show, we highlight people's stories, we celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peterson Toscano. Welcome to episode 43 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Friday, December 20th, 2019. And to begin, I want to thank you. Thank you for so many things. For one, thank you for listening to our show. You may be a new listener or a faithful, frequent follower. Thank you also for the many messages and tweets saying how much the show is helping you become a better climate action figure. Thank you for your feedback, suggestions, and ideas. And many thanks for telling your friends and colleagues about the program. I'm also grateful for the many guests we had on this year. Each episode, I learn something new from passionate and committed people. But mostly, though, I want to thank you for the climate work you are doing. As advocates, educators, rebels, concerned citizens, and volunteers, you have chosen one of the hardest topics in the world to address. You keep learning and growing. You face discouragement and apathy, and you press on. Because of your sheer tenacity and your love for our world and all it contains. Regardless on how you land on the hope-despair scale, you remain determined. Thank you for all you are doing. May you see many fruits from your labors in the year to come. On today's show, you will hear answers to our most answered puzzler question yet. You were talking to your friend Darren about carbon fee and dividend legislation. You say it's one of many approaches that will help us transition away from fossil fuels to better alternatives. Daryl shot back, "Well, that's just stupid. People will use the dividend to continue paying for fossil fuels. Giving them money enables them to stay in their fossil fuel lifestyles." We will hear what listeners had to say. In the Art House, playwright Chantal Bilodeau returns to our show and reports back to us about climate change theater action. They selected 50 short climate change-themed plays from 50 playwrights from all over the world. In 3 months, 200 communities organized readings in 30 countries. Chantal shares highlights and explains how you can get your hands on these plays. But first, I want to introduce you to a fellow climate action figure. My guest today finds great joy and fulfillment in the climate work she does. In hearing some of her story, I hope it inspires you in your own. Meet Solemi Hernandez. Originally from Venezuela, Solemi has lived in the U.S. state of Florida for the past 17 years. She seeks to improve conditions for immigrant farm workers. She's also raising her two sons. And Solemi has taken on a very big mission.
Actually, I'm trying to save the world.
To do so, Solemi volunteers and works with various groups.
I have been a volunteer for many organizations, and I have been a volunteer for 2 years for Citizens Climate Lobby. I am now the Southeast Regional Coordinator. I am fortunate now I can do the work I do and get paid for it, and I don't have to have another full-time job to do what I'm passionate about, which is create social change and protect our environment. We created a Pachamama Alliance for Southwest Florida. It's an umbrella organization that connects every other environmental and social justice organization to do work for the community. I'm also involved with the Waterkeeper Alliance. I'm in the board of Calusa Waterkeepers, which is the local waterkeepers on this area. I'm also the conservation chair for Sierra Club in the area, Group Calusa.
Solemi has become a climate justice activist, seeking out ways to end fossil fuel pollution. It is a big shift from the work she and her family did back in Venezuela.
Ironically, I used to work for the oil company on international investments as a secretary. Well, my grandfather was the first one who started in the oil company, and he built a career there without not even a college degree. He went up to the ladder until he was one of the leaders of the workers' union. And my dad, it's a chemical engineer. He just retired from the oil company. And all my family, through my grandfather, got involved in the oil company.
Her family lived in an oil town with plenty of perks and a fair share of problems.
Well, you know, everything was just was fixed to be a nice community, Americanized community. I mean, we have golf camps where people can go play. And right next to the park where we used to play in front of my house, there was one of these oil drill machines. I mean, at the time, we didn't realize, we didn't know better. But now all those images when I was a kid arise into my head, and I question myself, you know, what will be? Because, I mean, these toxins get to be a problem when the exposure is chronic and you develop the disease. My dad is recently here, and he came with us to a workshop we did on the Consulate of Mexico in Miami. And he just, for the first time, talked about his experience and how he sometimes, whenever he was on the field working, he couldn't even breathe.
Growing up, there were several factors that inspired and influenced Solomé to pursue climate justice work in later life. Her grandfather served as a powerful role model.
I was raised by my grandparents, and my grandfather, he used to be a member of El Sindicato, which is a labor union on the oil companies. And when there was a dictatorship, Pedro Jimenez, he was defending the workers' rights, and he was in jail. So my grandfather was already involved into politics, defending worker rights, and he was in jail like for 2 years. So that stuck to me all my life.
As a child, Solomé witnessed the negative impacts of fossil fuels right in front of her eyes.
I used to live right in front of a lake called Lake Maracaibo in La Ciudad del Zulia. And right in front of them, I could see this lake full contaminated. The joke was, is like, we don't want to put your hands in there or anything else because you're going to come out with a third eye. Or who knows what other mutation you may have because you're exposed to these toxins in the water. So since I was really early, one of the things that really broke my heart is that this beautiful lake that was connected with the Atlantic Sea, fresh water connected with the Atlantic Sea, and I could never enjoy it.
And there were signs early on that Solomé was not going to go a conventional route in life.
I was a rebel. I was always, you know, one of those, not your regular teenager or girl. I was a tomboy and always a rebel, you know. And I always was a person that I will defend my friends. You can mess around with me. I don't take it personal, but you mess up with my friend, I will take it personal. And I was, since I was a little kid, I remember, you know, it's another world in Latin America. I mean, people do fight. And I remember I was a tomboy and I was ready to fight for my friends.
Solomé is passionate about pursuing climate solutions, both for mitigation and adaptation. For her, the climate issue became very real in 2017 when her sons were just 6 and 10 years old.
I was here for Irma. I experienced it myself. I was 3 weeks without electricity.
Before the storm hit, she and the family evacuated to an emergency shelter.
We went to a school, and actually we thought we were getting away from the hurricane, but that's exactly where the hurricane entered through. We slept on the floor. My kids, my aunt, we took our dog, of course, all our pets. We were 3 days in this shelter, which was a school. When the hurricane started, we were on the cafeteria, sleeping in the floor. At one point, the cafeteria started to get flooded.
After 3 days in the shelter, the family returned to a ruined neighborhood and a house without electricity.
It was really hard to come home because most of the streets were blocked. There were a lot of trees, there were a lot of flooding. But we did return home, and then after that, it was just, you know, trying to figure out how to survive. The heat was impossible. Not many people had water in this area. but my water is not connected to the electricity. So I did have water. Everybody around my community came and took showers here, but it was so hot that whenever we went to sleep, we had to go to sleep wet. We used to get on the shower, get wet, and get in the bed completely wet because the heat was unbearable.
It was during Irma that Solomé witnessed what she already knew. Big storms like this one affects everyone, but not equally.
We got the opportunity to help people on the farm and worker communities. And that was something that uplifted my spirit and made me feel good under the crisis that we were living. But my aunt and many people that I know, their homes got damaged. It took a long time for the home to get repaired. They had to pay high deductibles for home insurance. I also had a friend that had get dialysis very often. When Irma happened, he was transferred to Tampa, and after that, he died. It's the difference in between somebody that have the financial means into somebody that don't, and in between that have other intersectional issues. For example, immigrants were afraid, which is where the people that we were working with, we got to work with the Coalition of Farmer Workers. They were afraid to talk to FEMA to get resources because they were concerned about FEMA or any government agency to find out their immigration status and where they were. So the community had to get together to help them.
Becoming more and more aware of the threats climate change brings can be overwhelming for some.
I was used to be very depressed before, and it was because I couldn't accept the kind of world we live on. Everybody's for their own, so there is not actually a sense of community, and that is something that is affecting, it can affect psychologically many people, just like it did with me. I felt alone. It's really hard when you fall into that depression because you feel like you don't belong to this world. So I see the urgency. For me, it's urgency. And actually, doing this, all my environmental work, is something that I have give a sense of purpose in my life. And through my activism and helping out with restoration projects and the work I do with CCL and other organizations is something, it's like what I said, it's my antidepressant. I don't see myself not doing this because otherwise I'd be sleeping in a bed depressed because, you know, it's what is at least make me feel like I'm doing something to better the world. And I have met the most wonderful people in the work I do. I guess this is what I have gave sense to my life.
Earlier this month, Solomé traveled to Madrid for COP25, the UN climate conference. The very concerns she has for justice and equality in her community are being echoed all over the world.
We're looking into shifting the mentality, and even we were talking about how things have changed. Human rights issues have changed, like the right to water or clean air. Even on the system itself, we have the right of a healthy environment.
Solomé recognizes there are multiple solutions that need to be pursued at the same time, including carbon pricing.
I mean, carbon pricing is one of the most effective ways to address climate change. And just to put it in simple matters, like I tell everybody else, and keeping the simple messages so people can make sense of the science and the economy of carbon pricing. Right now, renewables are becoming so cheap or competitive with fossil fuel. When you take those subsidies and put a price on it, the market is gonna shift. We have a dividend component, and the dividend component, it takes care of that gap to the underserved communities, the most vulnerable communities. But I think into the landscape when it comes to environmental justice, we need to bring to the table those people on those vulnerable communities at the front line and just get those relationships strong enough that we can trust each other and work together.
During Hurricane Irma, Solomé saw her community come together. Building community is essential climate work that complements all the other work we do.
Living in a community that have that sense of community is just part of a well-being. You feel more happy. You are more happy to be in a place where there's a sense of community and you feel that they're not alone. But I am passionate into what I do. You know, I really do this with the hope to create change and inspire all the ones with the best intentions of our communities to really do what is right and what is best for who are around us. I mean, we're living in extraordinary times of history, and just the matter of fact of being here alive, we're part of it. We have the power to do something, and every moment counts, and every little action, for more little that it is, it's something that adds to the bigger pot. And this is a movement that we're creating. Like, just like every movement in history, this time our movement is a movement of the rights. It's a human rights movement.
Salami is modeling for me a way to face our present and our future with empathy, sensitivity, and a commitment to fairness and justice. Over in our show notes, I have links to the various organizations where Salami volunteers and to her work at Citizens Climate Lobby. Go to citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. Click on the Citizens Climate Radio option on the right, then look for episode 43. Now it is time for the Art House. Back in episode 20, Chantal Bilodeau joined us in the Art House.
I'm a playwright and the artistic director of a small organization called the Arctic Cycle. The mission of the Arctic Cycle is to use theater to create conversations around the climate crisis.
Originally from Montreal, Chantal now lives in New York City. Every 2 years, she organizes a major international event.
Climate Change Theater Action was created in 2015. It happens every other year. And essentially, we commission 50 playwrights from around the world. So every continent is represented, and we have a good balance of cultural backgrounds to write 5-minute plays, very short plays, about an aspect of climate change based on a prompt. And then we take this collection of plays, we make it available to whoever is interested in organizing an event in their community within a certain time window that's in the fall. And we encourage people to use one or several plays to add materials from local artists if they want to, and to design the event exactly how they want it. So it serves their aesthetic, their community, their needs. And then we ask them to report, so we have a sense of who was there, how it went. They send us documentation, photos and videos if they have them. And then we build up this movement, and you know, that happens within 3 months, where everybody has a sense of what other people are doing and can get encouraged by the fact that even though their event might be small, it's being repeated all over the world. So it feels like something really significant. And then as part of the event, because it's called Climate Change Theater Action, what is an action that you can add to this artistic presentation? An action can be bringing people together who would not normally encounter each other. It can be a panel with scientists. It's like a way to deepen the conversation that is started with the artistic presentation.
For COP25, once again, Climate Change Theater Action asked playwrights to use their creativity to write short plays around a specific theme.
Lighting the way. So we asked playwrights to think about climate warriors and climate heroes who are lighting the way forward. Who are the people who are doing some great stuff? It could also be some abstract concept or a spirit, an animal, a community, but just how are we moving forward in a positive way? Is there any way to highlight that?
People at over 200 events in 30 countries heard readings of one or more of the plays. They gathered in schools, places of worship, public spaces, and even in the water.
A play was read in a kayak out in the water, and I thought that was just brilliant. I wish I could have seen it. Yeah.
Since they started the project in 2015, Chantal sees positive changes.
From 2015, which is 4 years ago, they're getting more and more sophisticated. I think we're more informed about the issue and have more sophisticated opinions and reactions to it. There was a sense of definitely community, a collective action also, as opposed to just individual action. So people wrote about the responsibility of big corporations and maybe how we can hold them accountable, a sense of all the activism that's going on in the world. So definitely a wider range and more intersectionality also, as opposed to just thinking about the environment.
These short plays have added fresh perspectives and creativity to climate events all over. In fact, this might be something you want to organize. Most of the times, it's just a simple reading. No memorization is needed, just a little practice. So, how can you get your hands on these plays?
Yeah, the plays from 2017, the last time we did it, are published in an anthology and available through the York University bookstore online. Where is the Hope is the title of the anthology. And then the 2019 plays, the same thing will happen. They will be published in an anthology, which will come out in 2020.
To learn more about this work, visit climatechangetheateraction.com. And if you like theater, stay tuned to Citizens Climate Radio, because in 2020, we will begin to share some short radio dramas. If you have a story you want to submit for us to consider adapting, or if you have an idea for the art house, feel free to contact me, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. Now it is time for the answers to last month's puzzler. You were talking to your neighbor, Darren. You explained the many ways we can address climate change. One proposal is to charge energy companies a fee when they extract fossil fuels. The money collected then goes to households. You said this carbon fee and dividend plan will serve as an incentive to switch over to cleaner sources of energy. Darren replied, "Well, that's just stupid. People will use the dividend they get to continue paying for fossil fuels. Giving them money enables them to stay in their fossil fuel lifestyles." So, what did you have to say to Darren? I received answers from many listeners, and here are some of them. George Galamba sent in this answer. "Well, Darren, you are half right and half wrong. You are right in that people will, at first, use the money they get from the government to continue their carbon lifestyle. But it's not stupid. It is, in fact, very intelligent. The dividend they get won't be enough to go out and buy a Tesla, so they will keep their old car. But one day they will need to buy a new car. Some folks will continue to drive the same kind of car, but others, many others I suspect, will say to themselves, I can use my dividend to continue to buy gas, which has become quite expensive, or I can use it to help me make payments on a new car that uses less or even no gas. The same thing for home insulation. If I use my dividend to insulate my house, I will spend less for heating and keep some of the dividend for more enjoyable things like beer and Netflix. In short, people are sensitive to price. As fossil fuels become more expensive, people will use whatever funds they have to find ways to use less of them. Good for the people, good for the planet. J. Michael O'Hara, in his answer, reveals an important effect of the carbon fee, which is invisible to most people. He explains, "Most of the carbon footprint of U.S. families comes from the goods and services they buy, which are not the obvious gasoline, heating, and electricity. The manufacturers of these things will not be compensated for their additional fossil fuel-related cost. The executives of each company will challenge their designers, engineers, architects, and purchasing managers to make changes in their systems to reduce their exposure to the steady, predictable rise in these costs. The companies who are most effective in these efforts will deliver products to the market at lower costs than their competitors. Shoppers for these products need only choose the lower-priced items to help drive the economy to a lower carbon intensity. No environmental education is required, only self-interest." Kate from Rochester, New York, left the following voicemail.
Hey, Peterson, this is Kate. Darren says that's stupid and people will continue using fossil fuels as much as they want. I say that's great. Yes, they will. For things that are really important to them, people will continue using fossil fuels and nobody's going to tell them that they can't. So if I want to take a plane and go visit my dad, I can still do it. But there's a lot of things that people don't really care about that much, and they're going to want to save money on those. So they're going to want to choose the less fossil fuel intensive solution. So for instance, if I'm buying an air conditioner, I'm going to start looking really closely at the Energy Star stickers. Or if I'm looking at cars, I'm going to start looking really closely at the mileage. And as the policy goes, there's going to be more and more choices because there are already more and more good choices. In fact, studies show that this policy is going to reduce emissions 40% over the next 12 years.
Many thanks to everyone who responded to our puzzler. So, are you ready for our new puzzler question? Here goes. You're at a political rally chatting with a new friend. Let's call her Heather. When you ask her if she wants to join your climate group, she says, "Don't take this the wrong way, but I don't have time for climate work. I feel bad saying that, but I work full-time, and I have two kids still in school. I don't have time for protesting right now." I appreciate Heather's honesty. Hearing what she says, how would you respond to Heather? Send me your answers. Leave your name, contact info, and where you are from. Get back to me by January 15th, 2020. You can email your answers to radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. Or, better yet, leave a voicemail of 3 minutes or less at the following number, 518-595-9414, plus one if you're calling from outside the USA. That number again is 518-595-9414. Well, we are nearly at the end of the show. As I record this, we are also at the end of 2019. I'm thrilled at the many topics we covered and the guests we had on the show. People like Brent Suter, a Major League Baseball player with the Milwaukee Brewers, poet Catherine Pierce. We also heard from master advocate Sam Daly Harris, circus artist Eliana Dunlap, Abigail Renton-Vinsold, and Nathan Biggs Penton joined us as well. We featured Extinction Rebellion member Robin Boardman, the brilliant climate communicators Hannah Pickard and Blair Bazarich from the National Network of Climate Change Interpreters gave us fresh insights. Chemists Dr. Michael L. Curry and Dr. Donald White from Tuskegee University revealed their exciting discoveries. Coal miners Michael Ray Witten and Nick Mullins told us their moving stories. We heard about green sports from journalist Lou Blaustein, and about fashion and pollution from writer Tatiana Schlossberg. Nicole Chatterson from the University of Hawaii and Nick Shikitano from Bucknell University talked about plastic pollution in our waters. We also featured Karina Newsom from Georgia Southern University and Adam Rosenbaum and Austin Ramsey from East Tennessee State University. And we started 2019 with Gael Henri Galot, speaking so movingly about the small island he and his family live on in the Philippines. Each one of these guests taught us more about how climate change affects us differently and revealed the many different ways people are pursuing solutions. These shows will remain available online for you to hear and share. I have a lot of fine guests lined up for 2020. And if you have suggestions for guests or topics, please feel free to contact me, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. If you like what you hear and you want to support the work we do, visit citizensclimateeducation.org to learn how you can donate. Citizens Climate Radio is written and produced by me, Peterson Toscano. Other technical support from Ricky Bradley and Brett Cease. Social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Monterano, Flannery Winchester, and Steve Volk. Moral support from Madeline Pera. All the music we use on the show is licensed unless otherwise specified. You can find Citizens Climate Radio wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher Radio. You can also listen at northernspiritradio.org. Join the discussion at our Facebook group page, facebook.com/group/citizensclimateradio. You can follow us on Twitter @CitizensCRadio. That's Citizens, the letter C, Radio, @CitizensCRadio. And feel free to tweet at me directly, @P2Sun. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see info about our puzzler and find links to our guests. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.